Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport as we look forward to a full weekend of Premier League games in the company of the assistant editor of The Mirror, Darren Lewis, and TalkSport's Alex Crook. From Russia with no love lost, Chelsea stutter in St. Petersburg. Can they get back on track with a visit from old foes Leeds? Ralph's ready to shoot down the Canaries live on TalkSport as he gets his little birdies off to fly in midweek. Steven Gerrard goes back to Anfield on the back of 3 wins in 4 matches. And Manchester City looks to take their midweek frustrations out on Wolverhampton Wanderers. Tottenham might play, but then again, they might not. With no fewer than 17 COVID cases and counting, the best way to take in the Premier League, and like Timo Werner's tap-in in midweek, you can't miss it. It's the Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Hello to Darren Lewis and Alex Crook. Are we feeling festive? I can see Darren's got a little Christmas tree in the background there. All ready for a bumper couple of weeks of Christmas action?
I am indeed. I am going to have a Christmas party. There might be cheese. Oh, am I allowed to say anything?
What's the answer for that? Everybody working from home? Is that okay? Or are we heading to a Christmas party? Or are we doing both? Just checking. In fact, actually, the question really is will we get a bumper set of Christmas fixtures? Because as we talk right now, there's a row going on, isn't there, between UEFA and Spurs. Spurs' next couple of fixtures are up in the air. They called off their Europa League fixture on Wednesday. UEFA insisted on Thursday it was going ahead. That despite Antonio Conte's side registering, I think, 13 positive tests and counting. I said 17 in the introduction, but I think that's because every 5 minutes it gets a little bit larger depending on who you talk to. What is the current situation? Does anybody know?
It's clouded, shall we say that. I got the information on Wednesday evening, actually towards the end of the United Champions League game, which was dire in the second half, that Tottenham were calling off this game. We then got the angry riposte from Rennes, suggesting that UEFA told them it was still going ahead, that they had already boarded the plane to fly over to North London. Listen, I can see both sides. I think that the whole reason that you have a squad is to cover for any number of absentees. And I know that's certainly how Brighton feel going into the weekend. They've got an injury crisis themselves. They're ready to play the game. They believe that Tottenham should as well. But then you've got the other element where Antonio Conte is saying that actually by doing training sessions with players who might possibly be carrying the virus but haven't yet tested positive, you're putting not only players in danger, but you're putting their loved ones at risk as well. So it's a very difficult situation.
It is, but surely they have all been tested and have returned negative tests because everyone is tested prior to these huge games, especially if you've had an outbreak. So they'll know if anybody's carrying the virus or not, won't they, Darren? Won't they?
They will, in theory. I mean, listen, we can say what we like about the team, but Tottenham's training facilities are state of the art. They've got the hotel there, the training ground as well, just by the M25. So what they could contain this situation very well indeed. And I think the biggest headache that Spurs will have is that, assuming they won't play a game before Liverpool on the 19th, because obviously you have to assume that it's going to be 10 days of isolation for the players who have and staff who have tested positive, they don't have any available dates to play in 2021. So they're going to be squeezing quite a few fixtures into January.
Well, the rules are that they have to play this Europa League game before December the 31st, otherwise they forfeit the fixture. So they have to play this between now and New Year's Eve. I was just looking at the squad that Spurs have registered for the Europa Conference League. I always get confused about what this competition is called. But they've got quite a lot of players registered. I think I just counted 35 players that were registered. And a bit like Manchester United on Wednesday night, they could just play a load of kids, couldn't they, just to fulfil the fixture? Why wouldn't you do that? I don't understand.
I think that Conte wouldn't want to do that because he's a winner. To me, I mean, I've been
it's not really the rules, though, is it? You know,
I've been. This guy celebrates goals as though they're the winning goal in the Champions League final. I think, as far as he's concerned, any competition he's in it to win it. And so I don't think he would want to just chuck a few kids in and just get rid of it. I don't think he... At first, I thought to myself, in their list of priorities, it doesn't really matter if they forfeit the fixture, he'll just move on. I actually think he wants to win the competition and create that culture of winning within the club that just isn't there.
Yeah, but as Crook has already said, Brighton want to make sure they finish in the top half of the table. They want to make sure they post a win. They've got an injury crisis. You know, they can't forfeit the game at the weekend.
But
you
none know, of this is Tottenham's fault, though, Sam. I mean, I think
none of it's. I understand that. Completely get that. But none of it is anybody's fault, is it? I mean, you have to deal with the circumstances that you're given.
Yeah, I agree.
What's the difference, Darren, between having eight players unavailable due to COVID and having eight players injured or suspended? If you take away the health risk that Antonio Conte has talked about, and you've already said that Tottenham's training ground should be equipped enough to keep everybody safe, there isn't a difference.
Well, if eight players are injured or suspended, there's no possibility of them being a risk to anyone, a health risk of any
kind. That is true. That is true.
Whereas if any players have the virus, tested positive, whatever, you still don't know what the situation is regarding any of the other players who may have been in contact with them. So there are all sorts of associated risks with that. So I don't think the two are comparable.
Does this bring into light, again, the discussion that's been had in the past about whether or not Tottenham should now say how many of these absentees have had the vaccination?
I have to be honest and say I'm not in favour of forcing people to have vaccinations. The cards on the table. I think that our duty is to educate and inform, but I don't think you could or should make decisions like this mandatory. Everyone is different. Everyone has their own point of view. I'm sure the people listening to this have their own points of view, and I think that they should be free to make those decisions themselves.
The other big issue which is going to come about, whatever happens here, if they're made to play it, then that creates a precedent going forward for other competitions, I think, as well, which is going to impact heavily on the Christmas schedule because, you know, with what is happening at the moment and infection rates rising everywhere, there's a high degree of possibility that that will bleed into football. Therefore, we could see quite a lot of disruption over the Christmas period where everything is so very, very congested. If they are allowed not to play the game and they have ruled this one out and Sunday's game, it causes another issue in terms of how long before we get another batch of positive tests that lead to more postponements, and there, where do you put those fixtures? So it's going to come with dilemmas, no matter the circumstance. And as we said right at the very top, it's no one's fault, but how you deal with it is going to be important going forward. Going forward, we've got a bumper game day. We're going to Manchester City against Wolves on Saturday, Chelsea Leeds, and to Carrow Road for Norwich against Manchester United.
Volleys Norwich in front.
Performances are the thing for me that build up the confidence, and they seem to be doing that now. They seem to be more than a confident enough group.
And wait for it, Fred with his right foot fires one into the top corner. Absolutely superb finish. The Ranić reign has begun.
The whole team defended extremely well. As I said, positively surprised. I didn't expect them to be able to play intensity-wise on that kind of level.
Further up the field they go. Fernandes with the ball towards Ronaldo. He hits it first time. What a volley, what a goal!
Having seen Cristiano yesterday in the second half, at his age, I've never seen a player who is still that physically fit.
Ralf Rangnick has overseen a win over Crystal Palace and a draw against Young Boys, with a lot of young boys in the team. The big hitters had the night off in midweek. They'll be refreshed and ready to press Norwich into oblivion at Carrow Road. Or will Dean Smith's side have a plan to deal with that, Darren Lewis?
Well, I think overall Dean Smith's side have far more belief than they did than they had had over the last 4 or 5 months. So I think it will be a different game to the one we expect, firstly on paper, and B, had Dean Smith not taken over from Daniel Farke. That said, the rest that Manchester United's players have had will be welcome, and it will enable them to go into this game full of energy and with the ability to do what Rangnick wants from them.
Yeah, and he was a little unhappy that his team didn't press enough in midweek against Young Boys. Diallo and Greenwood played well for Manchester United. Greenwood's finish for the goal with the cross just slightly behind him was brilliant. Great adjustment to his footwork and then the inventive, instinctive finish. But Neil Custis in The Sun this week said this about another Manchester United player who was trying to catch the manager's eye in midweek. Idolised by the fans for some reason, nobody seems to explain. He is apparently the answer to United's lack of creativity in midfield, except he's not. In fact, he's not very good. Who's he talking about?
Well, he's talking about Donny van de Beek. And I have to say, I agree with him. He's given the goal away. It was an opportunity for him to really shine, really impose himself, really be the leader of a young team. I'm not sure he did any of those things. He was okay in the first half, no more than that. I do find it a bit incredible that he's already got his own song at Old Trafford. That must be some kind of record for the player who's played the fewest minutes for a club to get their name sung by the fans. I don't think he's the answer to that creative problem. And it wasn't just him, by the way. It was a big opportunity for Aaron Wan-Bissaka as well, particularly how well Diogo Dalo played at the weekend. Wan-Bissaka was dreadful. I mean, that will just underline to Ralph Rangnick that he isn't the marauding flying fullback that he wants. And I think Dalo was the big winner on the night.
Good players don't become bad ones overnight. And I think Donny van de Beek did enough at Ajax to suggest that he does need a run of games. He had hardly any minutes under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Yes, okay, you say he had the chance to become a leader, but he did. I don't necessarily think he came there to become a leader as such. I think he just came there to be able to play his game. And I think when you surround him with more experienced players, I think you'll see a very different Donny van de Beek. And I think with Aaron Wan-Bissaka, again, he's a good player that hasn't become bad overnight, but his confidence is gone, and that's going to need a bit of building up. And I think once that does get building up, and I think Rangnick's the right man to do it, you'll see a different Wan-Bissaka. Let's not write these players off too soon.
He's a good player, but he's not a Manchester United player, in my opinion. And he's not.
Lukaku, and then Lukaku went to Inter Milan and won the league. And then suddenly said, oh, if we hadn't already signed Lukaku, we'd be saying to the Manchester United, okay, why can't we sign Lukaku? Come on.
I'm not sure you would on current form, to be honest. Van der Beek, yeah, he did well in Holland. He did well in Holland. So did Alfonso Alves, by the way.
So did Luis Suarez, by the way.
Oh, hold on, he's caught you there. Norwich are back on the bottom of the table, but largely undone by counter-attacks against Spurs. Timo Pukki scored 3 in 5, but missed a big chance against Tottenham Hotspur. But that was their first defeat under Dean Smith. So is this the new manager bounce, Darren, that Crook doesn't believe in? Norwich got 5 points in 3 games since he walked in the door. Or will they be able to sustain it, do you think, and make a challenge to stay in the league?
I don't think they'll be able to sustain it against Manchester United because I think Manchester United's forward line is too good. And I think it'll be a very similar story to last weekend. Norwich were Tottenham's equal, but they can't finish their chances. Dean Smith needs new strikers if he's going to stay in the league. I think as far as United are concerned, if they work hard, do what Rangnick wants, take their chances, they'll win.
Hakim Ziyech, another player who thrived in Dutch football and then has come and done quite well in the Premier League. Alireza Jahanbakhsh, who was the top scorer in the Eredivisie before he came to the Premier League.
That worked out well.
Where's he now? So Sebastian Allaire's doing very well in the Dutch league. Yeah, I think he swings and roundabouts. It would be interesting to hear, actually, from our listeners, at Sam Adderface, at Mira Darren, at Alex_Crook. Players that have done extremely well in Holland and then have done very well in the Premier League. We'd love to hear from you.
Loads of them. I can't believe you give us that open goal.
Did Jan Venegor of Hesselink play in the Premier League?
Jan Venegor of Hesselink.
I think he played for Celtic.
Yeah. Pierre van Hooijdonk.
Far too easy, Alex.
Chelsea's worst ever signing, Winston Boharder. Did well in Dutch football and then basically did very well out of the Premier League by flying in on a Monday morning and out on a Friday afternoon, training in Chelsea on 45 grand a week or something.
Didn't Ruud van Nistelrooy score one or two goals in Holland?
He was all right, Ruud van Nistelrooy. I think he was bad, okay. Yeah.
He was okay. Yeah. What, didn't Norwich have a Dutch striker last time they were stinking out the Premier League as well?
Ricky van Wolfswinkel.
That's him.
I don't know if he was Dutch though, was he? Was he Dutch? I don't know. Anyway,
he sounds Dutch.
United have won the last four trips to Carrow Road. Do you think that you can tell me the last Norwich City striker to score a winning goal at Carrow Road against Manchester United? Can you do it?
I think it was a 1-0 defeat.
It was.
Crikey, that is a good question.
Attention.
Wasn't Dean Ashton, was it?
It wasn't Dean Ashton, no.
Chris Sutton.
It wasn't Chris Sutton.
It's more recently than that.
It's more recent.
Maybe about 10 years ago, something like that.
I tell you what, keep it in your brain and see if you can answer it. And I will give you another opportunity in the next few minutes. That's our 5:30 game, Norwich against Manchester United. Chelsea leads at 3 o'clock on TalkSport 2. They failed to win four of the last seven Chelsea in all competitions. They dropped to second in the Champions League group. They're struggling to keep a pace, which is being set by Liverpool, Manchester City. Why?
I think they've had a lot of injuries. I think they are missing badly N'Golo Kante, Kante. I think N'Golo Kante, it kind of underlines why it was madness.
You said it right the first time, by the way. It's definitely N'Golo Kante.
Kante, I was right, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were right, yeah, definitely.
I think it underlines his absence underlines why it was such madness to have the idea that Jorginho is the third best player in the world, because wherever Jorginho is, Kante is above him. And I think when you look at the teams that Kante has played in and what he's done for those teams, you see how undervalued his contribution is despite all he's done. And, you know, even the good things that are being said about them, they're not good enough, because he is a wonderful, wonderful player who does the job of two, possibly even three people.
Yeah. And
Chelsea are missing him big time at the moment.
Well, he didn't ever get injured before he came to Chelsea, but now they can't get him fit, and they haven't been able to get him fit for the last 2 years. It's been a real problem. I wonder how much of that is down to being overused. I look at Jorginho, he's been overused and now he's having his problems. They experimented with Reece James in there on Wednesday. Mateo Kovacic has been injured. He's now returned and got COVID, so he's going to be out for at least 10 days. Saul has been a waste of a loan, really, because it just hasn't worked. He's just not up to speed. Barkley's come back into the picture. That blend in midfield has been a problem since the beginning of the season. I mentioned it to you, I think, after the second or third game of the campaign, saying it was an issue for Chelsea. The big bonus they've had is the return of Loftus-Cheek, who has been important, and he's been very, very good, by the way. It is something they need to sort. That balance has got to somehow sort itself out.
And is it an issue with squad depth as well, when you compare it to, well, certainly Manchester City, but possibly Liverpool? They've got a lot of players that you've just mentioned there, but is Ross Barkley the type of player that's going to win you the Premier League title if he plays on a regular basis? They still haven't really found a backup option to Lukaku as he feels his way back to full fitness. I think for me, that's where Chelsea just fall a little bit short, despite the fact they spent so much money over the last few transfer
windows. I don't know about you, Darren. I can't have that. I think they've spent a lot of money and they've got a lot of good players there, good quality players that people would love. I mean, I like the Liverpool squad at the moment. I think it's got a good balance to it, but there's a lot of young players in that Liverpool squad that are there to prop up in backup positions. Chelsea have got established internationals in backup positions, Darren.
Yeah, I mean, I've used this line before, so anyone who's heard me use it, apologies, but Chelsea have got a squad like a Christmas hamper, and I can't have the idea that squad depth is an issue. Until now, when they were in that wonderful run, everyone was saying, oh, Chelsea squad the best in the Premier League, and then they have one or two dodgy results and suddenly the idea is that they don't have any squad depth. I can't go along with that, because I just think that they'd gone on that fine run without their £100 million striker who was injured, and many people thought at that point they'd struggle. But you've got some terrific players who can't get a game at Chelsea. So, no, I can't go along with that. I just think it's about Kante on one hand. And also, I just think maybe the standards have dipped a little bit. I just look at the desire against Watford, and there wasn't that sharpness that I'd seen in previous games. They were unlucky against West Ham, because that was an attempted cross that basically went. I'm not having that. But, I peeled back an old scab, and I can see how distressed you are, Sam. But I just think, as far as Chelsea are concerned, they're better than they're playing, and they've just got to make sure their standards get back to what they were.
What about the contract situation with one or two players? Is that possibly causing a bit of unrest in the camp? I mean, you mentioned to me that Christensen, Sam, didn't cover himself in glory in midweek. We know there's an ongoing contract dispute there and a similar situation with Rudiger as well. So could that be an issue?
And Afpilicueta's out of contract at the end of the season. Maybe it does feel a little bit unsettled. I mean, yeah, the Christensen situation is what it is. I mean, he obviously wants to move. Just let him. Rudiger is slightly different. He's obviously played brilliantly for Chelsea this season. He's been a vital part of their success. So, you know, I suppose it depends whether or not they give him what he wants, which is to be one of the best players at the team. If Chelsea were a Christmas hamper, then would they be a Fortnum and Mason's Christmas hamper? And what would Liverpool be in comparison? Would there be a Selfridges one and Manchester City a Harrods Christmas hamper?
I'm not rich enough to know what is in any of those hampers, but clearly you asked
that. Don't give us that.
Better place
don't
to tell
give
me.
Us that. You've got more Christmas hampers than Boris Johnson. Right, okay. On the plus side, Timo Werner has scored two good goals in midweek, and they needed that, Chelsea. Leeds United, what Christmas hamper would they be in terms of squad depth? An empty one, I think.
Lidl's at the moment. We were talking again, weren't we, in midweek, and I think we both fear for Leeds a bit. Calvin Phillips out for 2 months is a massive blow. We saw Liam Cooper hobble off at the weekend, and I was told that Patrick Bamford had injured himself celebrating that late goal, tweaked his hamstring, so he won't be available for this weekend either. And again, we talk about squad depth. They just haven't got it, Leeds. They played Tyler Roberts as a false number nine at the weekend. He got his goal, but he isn't going to score enough goals to keep them in the Premier League. They need Phillips and Bamford fit and firing, along with Rafinha, for me, to pick up victory. So I think it's a big problem for Marcelo Bielsa and one they might have to address in the January transfer window.
Wolves against Manchester City is our lunchtime offering on Saturday. Wolves did well against Liverpool last week, but they will find it a little bit harder on the road against Manchester City, who are back on top. City have won 7 in a row now. But Wolves can bank up and look to strike. Well, sort of. They don't really actually strike. They just bank up. They're very well organised. They keep you at arm's length. They're decent with the ball, but they never really hit you hard on the counter. They've scored one goal, Darren, in 508 minutes of football. I mean, you could say City conceded against Watford, so there's an opportunity for Wolves to score in the game. But do you think that they can pierce the City defence?
Well, actually, you've answered your own question in some respects, in so much as I think Wolves will go into this game hoping to stay tight, secure, and ensure that a City side that can score from anywhere don't manage to get past them. They only conceded the other day against Liverpool in the very last minute, 94th minute or so.
And I think so lucky, weren't they, Darren? Were you prepared to admit that?
A way to win, and that's what top teams do. Your Chelsea side might want to try it once or twice. listen, I think when you're playing City, your owners, you should be thinking about not conceding. First of all, if you're going to stay in the match. And I think that's what Wolves will look to do. Listen, a few of us didn't know that much about Bruno Lage before this season, but we know that he's got some good ideas in terms of the way he likes to play the game. He set the team up well. They're in good shape at the moment. They've drawn 2 of the last 3. Before that, they'd won 5 of the previous 7. And I think City will win, but I think what Wolves will look to do is frustrate them.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be a hiding. And actually, I think Bruno Lage deserves an awful lot of credit for maximising that Wolverhampton Wanderers squad. He didn't do much surgery in the summer. They're still too reliant on Raul Jimenez. If he doesn't score, nobody else does. Adama Traore, possibly the most frustrating player in the history of the Premier League, because he has all the attributes to be a real menace in that final third, but his decision-making is terrible. I could see Manchester City winning by 2-0, but I don't think it will be as one-sided as maybe it would have been when the teams met last season.
Grealish got a lot of social media stick. Shock, who doesn't, in midweek. Let's be a little bit constructive, though. Have his performances been up to scratch? No goals and 1 assist in the last 12 appearances for Manchester City. But I was looking at some of the other players across the league. You know, Kevin De Bruyne, Lukaku, Kane, Grealish, Maguire, Shaw to some extent, Calvin Phillips, Jorginho. These players who have had long summers and have been integral parts of their club's success or otherwise over the course of the last couple of years, are we starting to see the effects of all of the football that they have been playing over the last 18 months, 2 years?
In a word, yes. I mean, you look at last year and the way that COVID meant that football was spilling over into the autumn, into the summer. I mean, you saw games being played in the August, and then we started 6 weeks later or something. And then obviously we went all the way to the very end. You mentioned quite a few England players in that list, and you mentioned a couple of Italian players as well. Well, who did England play in the final of the European Championship? So yeah, in a word, there are some big players who have had long 2021s. And I think at some level we are seeing the fallout from that, because Jack Grealish is not a bad player. It's going to be a natural progression of his game anyway, that Pep gets him scoring more goals. I don't think he's done that badly for me, but I do think we are a public that likes to complain a lot, aren't we?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Game day here, bringing you the very best of the action in the Premier League. It's always a thriller with Talk Sport.
Oh, what a goal that is by Bernardo Silva. Curled into the top corner.
It's better to be there than to be 10 or 15 points behind. It's better to be there, but a lot of games, tough game is coming.
Jimenez now with a good ball into the area to find Wang. Wang shot, and he scores.
Mason Mount on the volley. What a goal for Chelsea.
It's Leeds United 2, Brentford 2. It's come in the last second.
We started this race as the hunters, and before the race is finished, we will be the hunters.
Thibaut Pouki with an absolute rocket of a shot. He's taking it on the volley.
Fernandes with the ball towards Ronaldo. He hits it first time. What a volley, what a goal.
Success can only be achieved with development, and obviously there is still space for improvement.
Never a dull moment on game day on Talk Sport.
Now, we're always in danger of getting sentimental when an old legend goes back to a former home. Liverpool against Aston Villa gives us the opportunity to see Steven Gerrard back at Anfield for the first time as a manager. And Aston Villa seem to have gone north in terms of their performances since he took over. 3 wins in 4. What's he done, Crook?
I think just by his pure personality, he has got a reaction from the players. Steven Gerrard, a genuine Premier League icon, although of course he never won the Premier League. We should remember that, Darren. But he is someone who will instantly command the respect of the dressing room. I think he's a decent tactician, and I do think that Aston Villa under Steven Gerrard have looked much more well-drilled, well-organised. They've been defensively more resolute, and I think they might just cause his former club one or two problems this weekend.
Am I allowed to go?
There you go. Darren, please have your two pennies worth before he, the smug boy down on the South Coast, cracks the camera with his smile.
I saw a stat somewhere that impressed me quite a bit. Gerrard prior to...
Was it about Demba Ba?
You know what? I'm not going
to
dignify
that. Don't rise to the bait.
He'd only lost 4 out of 61 games as a manager prior to last week. And that says a lot about the impact that he's had in his short spell as a manager. And there are very clear things that he's managed to establish since taking over as a manager. His authority, a very clear tactical plan, and discipline within the dressing room. And that's why players not only want to play for him, but improve under him as well. And he's brought that to Aston Villa as well, because they look a different club to the one that lost five in a row and cost Dean Smith his job. And I think whatever happens at Liverpool, this will be a terrific game, because he likes to play high-octane football, get his fullbacks forward, get balls into the box, cause problems for the defenders. He will know all about the Liverpool mentality and the way that Liverpool like to play, of course, having played, having made himself a footballing legend at the club. So this should be a really, really fascinating game.
Jurgen Klopp's side have scored 44 league goals in 15 games this season. I did them on Tuesday night away in AC Milan in a game that meant absolutely nothing, like nothing to them at all. They'd won the group. They were already through. They could have played all the kids and reserves and not worried. And then they came out and they absolutely bossed that match with Mane, with Salah, with Origi. I mean, it was frightening. I mean,
AC Milan against a team that are top of the Italian league
and had to win. So AC Milan had to win, and they're top of the Italian league. And Liverpool with their reserves and Mo Salah, Salah was absolutely brilliant once again, were fantastic. And that would worry me. I mean, it's unlikely that they're going to slip up against Aston Villa, Alex.
Yeah, I think that AC Milan game probably just highlights the golfing class between the Premier League and a lot of the so-called European powerhouses. I've just found a page on the TalkSport website that Darren might want to peruse, actually, when he gets an opportunity.
Okay.
We're obviously talking about an emotional return for Steven Gerrard. The atmosphere will be wonderful at Anfield. I'm sure he'll get a hero's welcome. The article is called 10 Rubbish Man United Players with More Premier League Medals Than Steven Gerrard. They include Luke Chadwick, Darren Ferguson, Thomas Cusack, Ronnie Woolwork, Roy Carroll, Jordi Cruyff, and Darren Gibson.
I understand the relevance of that, but it's great. It's great that you've brought it up. Thank you very much. Talksport.com, by the way, for more great insight like that. Arsenal against Southampton is also Saturday at 3:00. Now, Arsenal, let's just lay it on the line. They're not very good, are they? I mean, we've said it on this podcast since the beginning of time that this whole sort of excitement that bursts into life as soon as they beat Burnley or Norwich or someone, you know, that all of a sudden they've turned a corner. They seem to turn a lot of corners and end up smashing into a dead end, because I was with Crook on Thursday night at the Manchester United game, and I was like, you know, United were rubbish, but they're even worse. And then I went, and on Monday night, they lost to Everton. I mean, and Everton are in absolute turmoil and didn't even play until the last 20 minutes of the game and still managed to beat Arsenal. I mean, as soon as they come up against anything, this is a phrase that we've used so often. I mean, if we're talking about hampers, I mean, seriously, I mean, there's not much in their little basket, is there?
No, they'd probably be a Tesco hamper, actually. A Tesco's finest.
Tesco's finest?
Yeah, because
Not the blue and white stripe version.
Well, no, I think against the lesser teams in the Premier League, they're Tesco's finest. When they come up against the big guns, yeah, maybe they are Tesco blue and white, Tesco saver. They were poor against Everton, no two ways about it. And Richarlison could have had a hat trick, the two marginal offside calls. I like the fact that he posed with a match ball afterwards and was claiming a virtual hat trick. But Mikel Arteta makes some baffling decisions. Taking off Tierney in that game to bring on Tavares, who again looks great against Burnley and Leeds, but he struggles up against anyone half decent down that side. Left it too late to bring on Aubameyang, despite the fact that Aubameyang is absolutely dreadful, particularly away from home. And they've just got a soft underbelly that will be cracked time and again this season. Darren Bent on the boot room is saying top six should be their priority. I think they'll be lucky to finish in the top eight.
I find it hard to argue with that. I think the biggest thing about Monday night's game was that Everton wanted it more. And you can spend money, as much money as you want, but if you don't have that desire within your team, then you've got no chance. And I think I look at all the players that Arteta's brought in. Ramsdale is a fantastic goalkeeper. Yeah, but elsewhere in the side, I'm not that impressed with one or two of the players that he's brought in. And I think that if you look at the teams that they've beaten in this unbeaten run, some of them were Carabao Cup teams. Some of them were, you had Leicester who didn't turn up in the first half. Aston Villa, who in that poor run couldn't defend. Spurs, who always lose to Arsenal. Newcastle, who were awful. They were
AFC Wimbledon.
Exactly. There were teams that Arsenal should be beating. But as soon as they step up in class, they get slaughtered or they get outfought. And that's why I think Alex is right.
Yeah, and the balance at the back, which we were praising in during that run, you know, with the fullbacks, Tierney and Tomiyasu, White and Gabriel started to form a decent partnership. That's all starting to creak
a little bit now.
He is. He's the best of that back four, without a doubt. He's a good player, Tomiyasu. But Tierney gets injured too much. Tavares is okay against modest opposition. The other two, depends on what day it is, to be honest with you.
They're easily bullied.
Gary Lineker made quite a lot of Tavares references when Nuno Tavares played well the other week. I don't know if you saw it on Match of the Day. He came out with all their songs, but he missed Heaven Must Be Missing an Angel. And I must admit, every time I see Tavares, I keep saying, oh, Heaven Must Be Missing an Angel. I did it all the way through the game.
Yes, he did. I can vouch for that. And it didn't get annoying at all for me or anybody sat around us. So I can promise you that.
Anyway, Brentford against Watford. And that's the best song that they've done. Brentford against Watford is also this weekend. It's Friday night, actually. So we'll quickly go through that one. Brentford, you never know what you're going to get with Brentford, do you, really? I mean, they can be very good. And then that they end up throwing away the odd result. And it's a bit like that with Watford. They could be absolutely devastating in attack, especially away from home, actually. Oh, Vicarage Road, as Crookie found out to his cost. But then on another weekend, they can be limp and impotent. What do we expect on this Friday night feast of football?
Well, on paper, this is one of those games where the television company have clearly picked it to get two teams out of the way that they don't necessarily want to put on a prime time slot. But I think
is that all the fixtures this weekend? Because Palace Everton is the 4:30 on a Sunday.
Yeah, it's one of those rubbish weekends in the build up to the Christmas period. But we're still giving all 10 games.
You can watch it all on Talk. You can listen to it all on Talk Sport.
You can't actually. You can only listen to the good ones on Talk Sport. Only the good ones on Talk Sport this weekend. Next week, by the way, when they're all cracking, belting fixtures, all 10 alive on Talk Sport. Yeah.
But I think this will be a better game, actually, than the neutral might expect, because we know that Watford under Claudio Ranieri are very good going forward, not necessarily defensively. And we know that Brentford are a team who like to play as well. So I think there will be goals in this one. I'm not sure that Ivan Toney will be ready to return for the Bees. So that's obviously a big loss for them. Ismail Assar has missed the last couple of games for Watford. He would be a great bonus to come back. But I do like that Watford front three of Dennis, Saar, and Josh King. You know, there are goals in that team. And this is a big game for Watford because they're not cut adrift. They're in danger of being cut adrift. But if they can pick up a win, they're suddenly right back in the fight for survival.
Hello, Lucy. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Are you in a festive mood?
I am, actually, yeah. I've whacked the tree up.
Okay. All right. Okay. It sounds delicate. Have you decorated it?
Of course I have. That's the process of putting up a tree in it. Actually, I quite like Darren's baubles.
Lucy, you're getting a little bit too familiar. bearing in mind that you've now betrothed, aren't you?
She's loved up.
You're fully loved up.
Well, no. Well.
Hey! Yeah. Oh.
Whoa. Well, Crook's now seen him as well. Crook had a little Facebook stalk a minute ago.
Yeah, we've all had a good look.
He looks a very nice young man, Darren.
Darren, we put the photo in the group. You can look at it. So what have you got for us this week then, Lucy? A little bit of a love quiz as Brighton may entertain Tottenham, may not, depending on what happens over the next 24 hours.
This could be the most pointless quiz since your appearance on The Chase, couldn't it?
No, because the quiz still exists, even if the game doesn't.
Can I just say, Darren, when we went to the Man United game, he sent me a message in the morning saying that he had, quotes, turned down the chance to appear on Pointless to take me to Old Trafford. And then my response was, if I were you, I'd have turned down the chance to appear on Pointers because you were so rubbish on the chase. Nothing to do with me going to Old Trafford, by the way.
It was a chance to redeem myself, actually. I was going to be teamed up with Carl Fogarty on Pointless, and I said, no, I'm going to spend the evening with Alex Crook.
He's quite short as well, isn't he?
What, Alex Crook? No.
I feel like I'm at one of those dinners where the couple that invited me and my wife are arguing amongst us.
Anyway, Lucy, quiz time. Come on.
Right, Darren, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
What is Tottenham's lowest finish in the Premier League era?
Oh. Oh, my word.
This is your patch, isn't it? You covered them for a long time. Well, you should I've covered know them this.
Since 2005. But obviously,
yeah, 16 years, yeah.
Yeah, but then there is a few years before that. That might be a little bit of... I'm going to go 11th.
Crook?
I don't think they were great when the Premier League first started. I would say 12th.
14th.
Oh, you were close, Sam, but it's actually 15th.
In that first season when there were 22 teams, was it?
That was in the 1993-94 season.
Oh, second season.
Wow. Okay. Question right. Number two.
Sam, how many national team players does Brighton currently have in their squad?
God. Well, they have... we'll have to go through it. Handbags plays for Iran.
He's not there anymore, by the way.
He's on loan somewhere, though, isn't he?
I think they sold him.
You sure? Mm. All right, we'll get rid of him then. Dunk obviously has played for England, hasn't he? Did he play one game for England?
Yeah, he's played once, yeah. Why am I helping you anyway?
I don't know. Who's the goalie now? It's not the little small fella, is it? It's Robert Sanchez. He played in goal.
The little small fella.
He's played for Spain recently. And we're going to end up going through the whole squad here. I think they've got 12.
Incorrect, Darren.
How many internationals do they have in this squad?
It depends how much what you count as the squad, doesn't it?
Well, I'm counting all 26.
I would say 14.
Incorrect. Crook.
See, I need to get this, don't I? Alireza Jahanbakhsh, by the way, is back in Holland now permanently. So he's not one of them. So they've got Sanchez, the goalkeeper. I think Cucurella, he played for Spain at the Olympics. Does that make him a fully...
Alex, what are you looking at?
Just give us a number.
What did you say?
What are you looking at?
Well, you must have done some sort of Googling in order to find that stuff out about Jahanbakhsh.
I Googled Jahanbakhsh, yeah, to put you right. I'll go 14.
You Googled a player that could have been in the squad, that you thought was in the squad. So that is technically cheating. So you should be eliminated from the
entire quiz. I knew he wasn't
in
the squad. I was correcting you. 14.
Inquiry, please, Lucy.
Let's all just calm down. All right. You're all incorrect. It was 8 players. Right.
They sold the little fella that used to play in goal, didn't they?
Yes, Matt Ryan, your friend.
Lucy, you just went very Jackie Weaver there. Do you know that?
Yeah, I have authority. It's cool.
If you disrupt this meeting, I will have to remove you from it.
You can't.
It's only the chairman who can remove people from a meeting. You have no authority here, Jackie Weaver. No authority at all.
She's just kicked him out.
Crook. You're going to love this.
Am I?
So, during the build of the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, there were many rumours of a cheese room being built. Sadly, the plans never went ahead. But, Crook, can you tell me which animal's milk is used to make Manchego cheese?
You winded me up.
You used to work on a cheese counter at Safeway. You should know this.
Goat.
Incorrect. Sam.
Bison.
No. Darren.
Bison?
You know what, right?
I think he's one of Brighton's 8 internationals, by the way.
Do you know what?
Bison, isn't a bison a male? Why would it have any milk?
It's a hoover, isn't it?
It's the sheep.
Correct, Darren. It is a sheep.
Google is your friend.
No. Look, you see me. I don't... Actually, I'm not brazen enough to Google it and then look at it while I'm actually broadcasting. If you're going to cheat, Alex, at least do it properly.
Well, Leicester against Newcastle this weekend. Newcastle won for the first time, and although it seemed a little bit cheesy, the unity they showed in the picture afterwards might hold them in good stead going forward. They should have beaten Norwich. They weren't that bad against Arsenal. Could they trouble Leicester, Alex?
Yes, I think they could, because Leicester themselves have got a few players unavailable for the weekend. Obviously, they'll go into it on the back of a huge game for them in the Europa League against Napoli on Thursday. I actually quite like that sense of unity that Newcastle showed. And I'm very cynical. Usually that's something that I would frown upon, but I think it's what's been lacking at that club. Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall and the staff have already brought the players together. And I think performances have improved. I agree with you. They weren't that bad against Arsenal. They've beaten Norwich, but that Kieran Clarke's moment of madness, and they deserve to win the game against Burnley. You look at the four games they've got coming up between now and the turn of the year. This is the one where I think they can get something out of it. I think the other three, very difficult, but this is a good time to play Leicester, and I wouldn't rule out Newcastle from picking up at least a point.
They play Manchester City soon. Next Thursday, live on TalkSport, they go to Liverpool. Tough for Eddie Howe, tough for Newcastle United. They're taking on a Leicester side that conceded 27 goals in the Premier League alone this season. That's only fewer than Watford, Norwich and Newcastle themselves, Darren. Injuries have been a problem, but actually, you know, Brendan Rodgers really needs to find a solution to that. That's his job, because this has been going on for far too long.
Yeah, no clean sheet in goodness knows how long. And I think as far as Rodgers is concerned, it hasn't really helped that he'd been linked with Manchester United for a bit. In fact, ever since he'd been linked with Manchester United, his form, the form of the club's gone off a cliff. But they have picked it up a little bit. They beat Legia Warsaw, they beat Watford, but then you'd expect them to beat both those teams, as well as Southampton, who they were held by. So I'm not really sure about this result, this game at all. I wonder if Newcastle actually could spring a surprise. The one thing I think will happen in this game, there will not be a clean sheet at all. Neither side can defend.
Okay. Burnley against West Ham. Can't believe we've mentioned clean sheets and then gone straight into West Ham, especially with you two around. Where is our dinner, by the way? Oh, we'll get to that another time. Burnley, West Ham this weekend, Sunday afternoon. And West Ham's team for the Thursday night game, almost unrecognisable to what you'll see on Sunday. I was told prior to the game, you won't recognise some of the names in our defence. So basically, this is an opportunity really for them to try and get Mikel Antonio back on form, isn't it? Because this is a guy who's dried up in front of goal, and it's a reason why West Ham are looking for a new striker in the January transfer window, Alex.
Yeah, that new striker could well be Darren's mate, Divock Origi. I think that'd be a really good fit for West Ham. And I think they do need a backup option to Antonio. As you say, that the goals have dried up for him. And I think the goals will dry up for Burnley now as well without Maxwell Cornet, who's been an excellent signing from Sean Dyche. Really a very un-Burnley-like addition to the squad. He's a very cultured player, clearly got an eye for goal as well. He'll be a massive loss. I think this is a great opportunity for West Ham to really cement themselves in that top four. I don't think they will finish in the Champions League places, but I think they're certainly going to add an extra dynamic to that battle and an extra problem for the likes of Manchester United and possibly Tottenham.
He keeps saying they're not going to finish in the top four because he's just trying to convince himself that Manchester United will. That's what it is. Because actually, you know, West Ham have beaten all of the teams that they're competing with in that area. They've beaten Manchester City on penalties in the Carabao Cup. They've beaten Chelsea. They've beaten Liverpool. They should have got something out of their game with Manchester United. They did beat them at Old Trafford in the Carabao Cup. So, you know, they're a good team.
They are. But again, I talk about squad depth. I really like the look of Manchester United's fixtures now, right up until March, I think they said on television last night. They don't play anybody in the top four until March. There's a great opportunity for Ralph Rangnick really to put some points on the board. And I just don't think the West Ham squad is deep enough. If you look at the options coming off the bench, there's plenty of them. They've got a lot of number 10s. How many match winners?
Well, that's what they're going to go and spend in January. I think they'll sign a central defender in January at least, and they'll buy a striker. And by the way, didn't Manchester United lose to Watford?
Well, that was under a different time.
Oh, right, okay.
Listen, Crook, I can't let you... I'm sorry, that's just nonsense. How many match winners? Remind me who they've beaten again this season. Both Manchester clubs in the Carabao Cup, Liverpool in the Premier League, Chelsea in the Premier League as well. They're also top of their Europa League group as well. They've won their Europa League group with a game to spare.
They won't have to play until the next round, the round after the next round of the Europa League, because they've won the group. So they get an extra round off.
I can't believe what you're saying, Sam.
No, I'm talking about the bench. You know, if you're going into the closing stage of a season, you're competing for the top four. Well, now the benches are going to be important, Darren.
Well, hang on a minute. Hang on. The bench is important, but that's why he uses a completely different side in the Europa League to the one he uses in the Premier League.
He might not do that as they go deep into the draw, though. What if they draw Barcelona in that knockout round?
They're already deep into the draw. They're already deep in the draw, and by which time they would have added at least two new players, including a centre forward and a centre back.
I think he's going to have to use more of his Premier League regulars in the Europa League. I think that will be another factor. And I look at the bench, Lanzini, Yarmolenko, Vlasic, they're tidy players. Are they going to pick you up crucial points at the business end of a season? I'm not convinced.
Listen, but listen, how long is a piece of string? The fact is, right now, this is their best ever start to a season. They're fourth in the Premier League. They've pulled off big results against big teams. So the idea that they don't have match winners just doesn't make sense. They are top of the Europa League group. They are into the last eight of the Carabao Cup. They could easily win that competition. When I look at the teams that are still in that competition, there is nothing to frighten them at all. Nothing at all.
I hope they do win that. I'll tell you what, Darren, do you want to do a double or quits on our bet? Two dinners, West Ham don't finish in the top four.
I just want one dinner. One dinner's fine. Burnley obviously will bring a physical approach. A trip to Burnley just a few days after the Europa League tie isn't great, but because we all know they've changed the whole entire team, that makes it a little bit easier for them. The Clarets have won just one league game all season, and they let in more goals than they did before. I think West Ham probably should see this as 3 points in the offing, although we'll wait and see on Sunday afternoon. Crystal Palace against Everton. Everton beat Arsenal on Monday night with a terrific last 20-minute turnaround, but this will be another stern test for Rafa and his men against Palace. Although, whisper it quietly, Palace have lost the last three in a row, and before that, drew with Burnley. Will the narrative change, Darren?
Yeah, I think it could easily change because Everton played well the other night. They were at home. They were in front of their own fans. They were motivated. It'd been a tough preceding few days, and they were at it. But I think Palace have quality, and they'll be at it in front of their own fans. I think the teams they lost against, they you'd expect them to lose against, really. So, no, I think that Palace could stop that rot against Everton.
If we're going on the Christmas hamper theme, I think Everton would be an eBay hamper. You know, there's one or two bargains in there that Rafa Benitez has picked up, but also some expensive purchases that maybe the owners regret.
You know, someone's going to send us a hamper now, don't you? Someone's going to say, what about us? You mentioned Tesco's hamper, Fortnum and Mason, and all those other expensive ones that Sam likes to partake from. What about us?
Damn, hope so.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Lots of cheese, please. Love a bit of cheese.
I'm still hungry. I haven't eaten since you promised to buy us dinner. Right.
Okay. Manchego cheese.
Yeah, from the milk of a bison. Right. Okay. That's it from us merry gentlemen. We'll be back on Sunday night when we review all of the weekend's action, look ahead to 10 Premier League games this week. And all 10 Premier League games are live on TalkSport on Tuesday night, Wednesday night and Thursday night via TalkSport, TalkSport 2 and the TalkSport app. So if you haven't downloaded it yet, then please do so from the Google Play Store or the Apple iOS Store. You can flick between all the games. Crook will be doing a commentary down at Brighton, I think, on Wednesday. Is that you're doing that?
Yep, myself and Paul Parker, looking forward to that one. You're doing the other nine, aren't you?
I'm doing Tuesday night, which is, what am I doing? Tuesday night. I'm supposed to be doing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, but I've been asked to go to Barrow, Ipswich on Wednesday. So that's sort of taking me out of Arsenal, West Ham. So I'm doing Tuesday night, which is Brentford, Manchester United, and Thursday night, Liverpool against Newcastle. So very much looking forward to that. Thank you very much for listening to us. Please tell everybody about the Game Day podcast from TalkSport, and we'll see you Saturday for Game Day live on the world's biggest sports radio station.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes.
Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.